Okay, shalom everyone and welcome. Today is Wednesday, December 16th, and we are here at our regularly scheduled program of Lunch and Learn, and it's wonderful to see you all. Just reminding the folks on the UOS Update WhatsApp group that we're starting now, and I'll post the Zoom link. Okay, great. Okay, so we are ready to get started. So we are doing the mitzvah shiur, of course, focusing on mitzvot, or in some cases, not a mitzvah per se that explicitly comes from the Torah reading, but a something that's alluded to in the Torah reading. This week we have a very, very interesting topic. It's related to how judges, how dayanim, make their judgments, and are they ever permitted to use extra legal or methods which are outside of the normal legal proceedings in order to make judgments? And what we're going to look at today is the very strange but famous case of King Shlomo, of Shlomo HaMelech, when he was faced with the two babies, right, the two women who came to him, and they both claimed that the baby was theirs, and Shlomo had to decide whose it was. And if you remember, he said, well, let's just split the baby in half. We'll read the story. But the question that that raises is, how did Shlomo have the right? What gave Shlomo the right to make such a determination in that case? The connection to this week's Parsha, of course, is that this week, this story is the Haftorah that we're going to read in Shul on Shabbat. I remember way back when, Shula, you asked if we could do a class on the Haftorah. So here we go. Today we have a class on the Haftorah. It's interesting to note that this is it's very rare that we get to read this Haftorah, because when Hanukkah covers two Shabbatot, this is the second Shabbos of Hanukkah, or this is one of the Shabbatot of Hanukkah, and often we don't read this Haftorah, we read the special Haftorah of Shabbos Hanukkah. But this week, this year, there's only one Shabbat Hanukkah. And so we have, and it's not this week, it was last week. And so we get to read the Haftorah of this week for the regular Haftorah for Parshat Miketz. And it comes from, if you're interested, Melachim Aleph, Kings 1, Perek Gimel, Chapter 3, starting with Pasuk Tetvav. So let's jump right in to this very, very interesting case of Shlomo. So here we go. The story. Az tavona shtayim nashim zonot el hamelech v'ta'amodna lefanav v'tomer ha'isha ha'achat bi adoni ani v'isha hazot yoshvot b'vayet echad ve'eleid ima b'vayet. So two women, two harlots, prostitutes, come before Shlomo. And the first one says, look, we live in the same house, and I gave birth to a child while she was also in the house. And 3 days after I gave birth, this woman gave birth. And we're alone, and there's no one else, meaning, I guess, suggesting that there are no witnesses in this case. There's no one who can corroborate the story. And we're in the house, no one else, just the two of us. Vayamat ben ha'isha hazot laila asher shechva alav. And during the night, this woman's child died because she lay on it. It's a very sad story, a very, very sad story, that she smothered her own child, and the child died. Vatakam betoch halayla vatikachet b'ni me'etzli va'amatcha yishena. So she got up at night, she took my kid while I was sleeping, and she took the kid, v'yet b'na ha'met hishkiva b'cheki, and she switched out my live son for her dead son. I got up in the morning to nurse my child, and I find that he's dead. And I looked at him, and I recognized that it wasn't my son. She said, "No, I'm sorry. Your son is the one who perished, and my son is the one who's alive." And the first one says, "No, the dead one is yours, and mine is the live one." And now we came before the king. So that's the story. You may be familiar with the story. That is the story. So now they're coming to the king, right? They're not just coming to tell him stories. They're coming to the king for his judgment to find out what he says about this whole situation, and if he could figure out who the child belongs to. Okay, that's the story of this week's Haftorah. Many of us may be familiar with what Shlomo does, and he says as follows: "Vayomer Hamelech, Zot Omeret Ze Bnei Hachai Ubnei Chamet, Zot Omeret Lo Ki Bnei Chamet Ubnei Hachai." So some of the first thing he does is he says back to them. He wants to make sure that he understands what's going on. He says, "Let's review this." Right? This is my son, the live one, and the dead one is yours. And the other says, "No, the dead one is yours, and mine is the live one." And so now the king gets serious. Vayomer Hamelech, Kichuli Cherev, Vayavo Hacherev Nehamelech. So the king says, "Get me a sword," and a sword is brought before the king. Someone has two devices on. Says someone has two devices. Let me. I'm just going to mute everybody, and that will solve the problem. But if you have two devices on, please turn them off. Okay, so now everyone's muted, so that should solve the problem. Okay, so the son. So he says, "Bring me a sword." Vayomer Hamelech Gizru et hayal lachai l'shnayim utenu et hachatzil la'achad ve'achatzil la'achad. He says, "Cut the child in two, cut the live child in two, and give one half to one and one half to the other." Vatomer ha'isha asher bina hachai el hamelech ki nichmeru rachameha al bina vatomer bi adoni. But the woman whose son was the live one pleaded with the king, for she was overcome with compassion for her son. She said, "Please, my lord, tenu la et hayeled, give her the baby. Tenu et hayeled hachai, give her the live baby. Vahameit al timitu, and don't kill him." The other insisted, "It shall be neither yours nor mine. Cut it in two." Then the king said, "Give the live child to her." Doesn't say clearly who he meant to, but popular understanding is to the one who objected to the king splitting the baby in two. "And do not put it to death. She is the mother." When all of Israel heard this decision that the king had rendered, and they were in awe, they were in awe of the king, they saw that their divine wisdom was within the king to execute judgment. That's the story. What I'd like to do is I'd like to do a quick survey of some rabbinic comments about what Shlomo HaMelech did. Then I want to ask you a question about the story and this week's Torah reading. And then we're going to look at an article by Rabbi Usher Weiss, really almost like a tshuva by Rabbi Usher Weiss, where he discusses some of the halachic elements of Shlomo's decision, as I said before, what gave him the right to make his decision. Let me stop here and see if there are any comments or questions that anybody has. Anyone, any comments or questions? You could use the raise hand function. You could put something in the chat. You could raise your hand in the screen. It is up to you. Any comments? Okay. So everyone understands the story. Great. Let's carry on. First, we come to the Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah says as follows. Bikesh Kohelet. Kohelet is a name for Shlomo. Hold on one second. Bikesh Kohelet Ladun Dine Danin Shebalev. Kohelet, King Shlomo, sought to issue judgments of the heart based solely on his intuition, right? So the Gemara already understands that this was part of Shlomo's approach to things, right? Maybe he felt that he had a particularly discerning heart, and so he wanted to be able to do this. Maybe he was seeking permission, right? A regular judge does not have the right to do this. The judge has to seek evidence and ask witnesses and has to cross-examine the witnesses. But Shlomo wanted to permission to do it a different way. Bikesh Shlomo, Bikesh Kohelet Ladun Dinin Shebelev, Shelo Be'edim, without witnesses, V'shelo Be'hatra'a, and without warning, right? There's a certain due process. In order for someone to be found guilty, or in order for someone to have to pay money, there has to be witnesses in certain cases when it comes to certain types of transgressions there, and punishment. There needs to be hatra'ah. There needs to be warning. Shlomo wanted to judge cases without these things. What happened? Yatzta bat kol v'amra lo. V'amra lo. A bat kol. A heavenly voice issued forth and said to him, V'katuv yosher divrei emet. And that which was written uprightly, even words of truth, al pi shnayim edim. At the mouth of two witnesses, o shlosha edim, or three witnesses, meaning Shlomo, I'm sorry, you have to follow the same rules as everybody else. You have to seek out witnesses. You have to give warning. You have to follow the due process. Now, what's interesting about this source is we don't know when to place it. We don't know if this was said before this incident. We don't know if this was said after the incident. But God seems to reject what Shlomo HaMelech wants to do. God wants Shlomo to follow the standard operating procedure, SOP. The standard operating procedure, okay? That's one source. We have another source, which is even stronger, even a stronger rebuke of Shlomo HaMelech. Amar Yehuda Bar Eli. This is a Midrash, Kohelet Rabbah. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eli said, Ilu Hayiti Sham. If I was there, he says, Pikrin, which is a chevel, a rope, Hayiti Korech Al Tzavarav, I would have tied a rope around Shlomo's neck. Kishehu omer kichuli cherev. As soon as he said, bring me a sword, I would have realized what he was up to, and I would have tried to tie him down, or I don't know what. I would have put a rope around his neck. Ilule she nitmalet alav rachamim kvar neherag. And had it not been for the fact, this is amazing, had it not been for the fact that he had compassion on the baby and did not kill the baby, I would have killed him. Right? He is an innocent child. How could you do this? Now, thank God he didn't do it. The mother said, no, give the baby, and Shlomo didn't do it. But ilulei shnit malet alav rachamim kivar neherag. He would have been dead already, meaning I had tied that rope around his neck and I was ready to do it. That is a strong rebuke against Shlomo HaMelech. Even stronger than the one before, where God says, don't do it, that's a bad idea. But then Yehuda Bar Eli says, not only is it a bad idea, but Shlomo would have been some sort of capital crime, he's suggesting. He's suggesting it would have been some sort of capital crime. Okay, yes, Mom, you have to unmute.
I think maybe he wasn't giving Shlomo enough credit. Maybe he did that knowing that the real mother would concede to not killing the child. I don't know if he really meant to kill the child. Maybe he would have come up with something later and say, well, I won't do it now, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yep, that's a possibility. The problem is we don't know. We don't know what he was thinking.
He was a wise king. I don't think he's giving him enough credit.
But we don't know what he was thinking. And the question in the story like that is, you can't wait. You can't wait to say, the problem is, you can't say, let me see what Shlomo's going to do. Because his next step may be to cut the baby in half, at which point it's too late.
I'm saying he's not giving him enough credit
that he wouldn't cut the baby. How could you give him credit when there's no time to waste? He has a sword in the air.
Giving him enough credit, Shlomo, that he would not kill the baby.
The question is, how could you give him the credit? There's no time to waste. It's one thing to give someone the benefit of the doubt when the stakes are low. The stakes are too high here to give him the benefit of the doubt.
A wise king. Wise kings don't kill babies.
Well, again, we didn't know that he was wise until after this. After this event that we know that he's wise. At that point, he seems to be. It's easy for us to look at hindsight and say he was wise, but Yehuda Bar Ilai makes a good point. Had I waited, we may have had two dead babies. I don't know. Maybe Shlomo would have done it. Who knows? All right, Carol. Carol, please go.
I was going to say, it's also one of these things where it's sort of like trial by fire. You know, you're really terrorizing this woman who's coming to you with a claim by threatening her with a sword. And that's...
Well, not her baby.
Well, her baby. Well, I would say... Apparently, since she said, okay, give my baby away that it'll live, she felt the threat very personally also.
So you think that Shlomo's methodology was just cruel?
Well, but that's also not what justice is. We don't believe in trial by fire, and we don't believe in, you know, torturing people to see if they're telling us the truth.
Right. That's an interesting word. On some level, this is torture. This is psychological torture.
Right.
Of the mother whose baby is alive. That's right. That's fascinating. Okay. That's a good point. Oh, so you're seeing this rebuke for this. Okay. Chana, and then Shula, and then Nitza. Chana, you have to unmute.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can, but I guess you cannot hear us.
Okay.
Shula. Unmute, Shula. Unmute.
Can you hear me?
Shula, go ahead.
The first commentator says, Bikesh Kohelet, Ladun dinin shbalev. So it's already, it's classified. His attitude is not based on real things. I mean that the fact that he bought the swords doesn't mean that really he was going to use it, because the whole process of his judgment it comes from the heart. And you know that when it comes to the heart, nobody would let a baby being...
So interesting the way you're reading it. Shebalev, from his heart.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's what it means, although that's such an interesting reading. Shebalev means, as opposed to being thought through and using normal processes, This was based on his intuition.
Right.
Not about Lev in terms of kindness. This is more about his intuition as opposed to facts and let's say witnesses and any type of information that would help him make the decision.
not just intuition. It really means dinim shebalev.
I don't know.
All meeting, the legal situation was not in like.
So then, like, why did God say no?
Meaning, it's like a pretend trial.
Why did God say no then? God said, well, no, you can't do that.
Say no.
You can't do that.
What do you mean by...
Of the Gemara says that God said, no, you have to do it with Edim. You can't just base it on your own intuition and your own heart.
But it didn't.
What does it say?
Yeah, but God rebukes him for it.
Yeah. Okay, but the trial was...
No, but in the case
based on that kind of
right. Okay, but in the source that you mentioned, where it says Lev, God says doesn't make it. Even if you want to understand Lev the way you want to understand Lev, God says no, that's not good enough. You're not allowed to do that. Now, why Shlomo did it anyway? Whether this story happened before or after this sort of source is referenced, it's unclear, but God doesn't like it. God says, no, there are rules, and that's the way it goes. So, okay, but I think your read of Lev is very interesting, very interesting.
Can you hear me now?
Nitza, one second, Chana. Nitza.
I have a question.
Nitza, did you want to ask something?
Yeah, when God judges, he doesn't have witnesses either.
Ooh, hold that thought. Hold that thought, Nitza. We'll come right back to that in a second. Excellent. Chana?
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe Shlomo HaMelech remembered the story about Akedat Yitzchak and the way Avram was putting his son on the Mizbeach and he said, Hashem Yareni et HaDerech, or what to do, and there will be a pitaron, a solution to that. Maybe when he said, bring me the sword, he remembered how God asked Avram to take the sword and to cut his son, and then there was a solution. So maybe...
Yeah, it could be. The difference there, though, is that God told him to go to begin with. So he was in contact with God from the very beginning. God said, Kach et bincha, et yechidcha, asher ahavta. God told him what to do. And here...
he's flying solo without a
safety net. But could be. In any case, even if that's what David thought, God disagrees. God says, you can't do that. And the Midrash in Kohelet Rabbah in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai disagrees. And now we come to the next Midrash in Tehillim, which is exactly what Nitza said. Excellent, Nitza. Nitza, the Midrash says, Amar David Lefanav. David, who was Shlomo's father, asks God for a favor. Ribono shel olam, tein mishpatcha lemelech. Give your ability to judge to a king. Kishem she'ata dan below edim below hatra'ah. Just like you, God, because you have all knowledge, you judge without witnesses and without warning. Kach yehe Shlomo b'ni dan below edim below hatra'ah. Allow my son Shlomo to also judge without witnesses and without warning. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kach hu oseh. Interesting. God says, okay, Vayeshev Shlomo al kisei Hashem. Shlomo sat on God's throne. The Midrash says, V'chiev shar lo levasar v'adam leishev al kiso. Can a human being sit on God's throne? Mahu al kisei Hashem. So what does that mean, on God's throne? Sheyadan Kiyotzro, he would judge like his creator, below Edim ubelow Hatra'ah, without witnesses and without warning. So for all of you who came to Shlomo's defense, this Midrash and Midrash Tehillim also comes to his defense. The Midrash Tehillim says that he got this ability as a gift from God because Shlomo asked him for it. So now we see that within Chazal, and this shouldn't surprise us, right? Within our rabbinic tradition, there is a machloket. There are different ways to view what Shlomo HaMelech did. One view has this going against God's own decision. And one, and within that negative view, it even suggests that maybe it was a capital crime. In order to save the baby, Yehuda ben Eli, had he been there, which of course that wasn't possible, but the, you know, in the rabbinic imagination, said he would have been, I should have killed him. And another opinion is, no, that's fine, because he got a special gift from God that most, that no one else has, but Shlomo HaMelech had a special gift. So you see, with even within Chazal, we have these different groups.
Rabbi, I want to say something different about the situation. That it's astonishing that you don't hear the voice of, in the whole story, you don't hear the voice of the men that involved in that.
Ah, well, if you remember the beginning of the story, they were
zoned. I mean, it's not okay, but there are men that knew one of, I mean, they are the fathers. How come there
We are not in the 20th century or the 23rd.
Yeah, I don't know if they had a DNA test.
Them without.
They couldn't.
No DNA test. Right. Okay. Excellent.
They were prostitutes. They probably didn't even know who the father was.
Right. Right. Okay. Before we move on to the halachic issues here, I want to share with you the connection between the Haftorah and the Torah reading. So this is from a wonderful sefer called Ben Haftarah LeParsha. Here you have it. And you see the cover on the screen. It's by Yehuda Shaviv, who was a teacher in Yeshiva Har Etzion from 1968 till 2003 when he retired, and he passed away in 2018. He has this wonderful book that goes through each and every Haftorah, and it explains the connection between the Torah reading and the Haftorah. So at the beginning of the article, he says the most obvious connection to the Haftorah, which I didn't put on the screen, is that the Haftorah begins with Vayikatz Shlomo Vihine Chalom. Shlomo woke up and it was a dream, which connects to the Parsha where we read Vayikatz Paro Vihine Chalom. So similar language, Vayikatz Shlomo Vihine Chalom, Vayikatz Paro Vihine Chalom. The difference is that and the Haftorah is the end of Shlomo's dream. We don't hear anything else about it. And in the Torah reading, we hear about Paro's dream, and the rest of the story is based on how he frees Yosef, right, in order to have Yosef interpret the dream. But Rabbi Shaviv offers another explanation of a connection, right? We always try to find a connection between the Haftorah and the Parsha, unless, like last Shabbat, there was no real connection between the Haftorah and the Parsha because it was Shabbat Chanukah, and so we read something from Zechariah and not the regular Haftorah. But generally speaking, we try to find the connection between the Parsha and the Haftorah. And here Rabbi Shaviv notes something really, really beautiful. He says as follows. Ulam ikara shel Haftorah sipur mishpat hanashim rachok b'mabat rishon Nicole Kesher LeParsha v'ulai ze ha'inyan. At first glance, it seems that there's no connection between the story of these two women and the Parsha. He says, maybe that's the point. And now he makes a beautiful insight. Chachmat Shlomo ba lidei bitui b'koshro ha'mufla laredet lirichshei liba shel eim amitit. Shlomo's wisdom is expressed through his ability, his amazing ability to understand the feelings, the feelings of the mother, of the real mother. Mevinhu ki liba shel aim hahoma al bina ma'adif. Hold on 1 second. I'm just going to mute people to get rid of the background noise. Mevinhu ki liba shel ha'ima shel aim hahoma al bina ma'adif sheyirehu ach tov b'chayav. The live mother would rather see the boy alive, gam im lo yimatzeh tachat yada, even if the boy was not going to be with her, right? She'd certainly rather see the boy alive with the wrong mother than the boy dead. Adif shinatein haben lisha acheret ubilvad shelo yuna lo kolra. Better to give the boy to the wrong mother rather than to allow anything negative to happen to him, anything bad to happen to him. Efshar sha'af mi parashatenu lamad hu davar zeh. It could be that David HaMelech, we try to understand where he got this from, maybe he learned this from our parsha. Right? Maybe David learned that the way I could figure this out is to see which of the women would rather the boy live. Even it's not just the boy live, right? It's the boy live with the wrong mother. I may never see this kid again. Right? The boy's going to be with the wrong mother. I'd rather that. Maybe Shlomo learned that from this week's parsha. What's the connection? Yaakov migalech harada bilti musberet lebinyamin. If you remember, at one point, Yosef, who's still hiding his identity, says, okay, if you want to see Shimon ever again, you have to go back home and bring me the youngest brother who you just told me about. And if you don't, Shimon will stay here with me in jail forever. That's what Yosef, who has not yet revealed himself, says to the brothers. So the brothers go back to Yaakov and say, listen, we got ourselves in some trouble. Shimon's in jail. If you want to see him again, we got to bring Binyamin down. And Yaakov refuses over and over and over again. He says, no, no, no. Kokach lama, why? Pen yikra enu aso. Maybe something's going to happen to Binyamin. Ela she'asiruv hachozer Le shloach hu bilti muvan lechalutin. This is hard to understand, says Rabbi Shaviv. Hare ein safek motzi midei vadai. Here we have something which is certain and something which is uncertain. Imhu mishaleach efshar sheyikre ason. If he sends Binyamin, maybe something's going to happen. Aval im ein hu mishaleach hare ha'ason vadai. But if he doesn't send him, then there's certainly something bad that's going to happen. Sheshimon kvar atzur b'mitzrayim. Hashalit tanachri is here. Shelo yishachrer et Shimon ad sheyuva Binyamin lefanav. So maybe something's going to happen to Binyamin. But if I don't send Binyamin and take the chance, Shimon will spend the rest of his life in jail, for sure. So why would Yaakov not chance it? It's only a chance that something's going to happen to Binyamin on the way. But it's a certainty that Shimon's going to be stuck in jail. Ella shelibo shel hora. Rather, however, says Rav Shiviv, the heart of a parent, in this case Yaakov is playing the mother and the father, because Rachel is dead. Ma'adif ben chai, imgam rachop b'mitzrayim, imgam asur. He'd rather know that Shimon is alive, even far away in Egypt, even in jail. Al pnei chashash rachok, over the chance that something's going to happen to the son. It's terrible that he'll never see Shimon again. But as long as he knows Shimon's alive, he's okay. That's okay. And because he knows that Shimon's alive, he's not willing to take the chance on Binyamin. And maybe that's what Shlomo HaMelech learned. A parent is willing to do anything as long as they realize their child will be safe, even if it means not being with the child. And that, says Rav Shaviv, may be the connection to this week's parsha. Okay, so now, what about, take a minute, see if anyone has any further questions. Emily wrote, I feel like he also caused the mother of the dead child to do something worse than she initially set out to do. First, she was just kidnapping, but based on his judgment, she decides she is in agreement with the murder. Yes, this is sort of what Carol said. This is some sort of psychological torture that he puts them both through. And in this case, forces the guilty mother into a terrible, terrible position. Yes, that is true. Okay. Any other comments or questions before we look at a few more points of the halacha. Okay, Shula, go ahead. Just unmute yourself, please. You have to unmute, Shula. Shula, we can't hear you. You have to unmute yourself.
I don't think that also the other woman, the liar, would go through the idea that the kid will be cut and be dead. I mean, even if it's she wanted the kids, she was a liar, but would she have? She would have had this also this strong feeling for a human being that going to be destroyed.
Yes, that's a good point. Although,
so it's a chance both of them would have reacted the same way. How can you judge?
Yeah, that's a good question. Although from the story, only one of them screams out, don't do it.
Well, maybe she wasn't giving a chance. But
maybe she wasn't raising her hand. Right. Okay. It could be. Yeah, that's possible too. That's a good point, Shula. Okay, Zach.
We have a detail which nobody talk about it. One child is 3 days older than another one. It means that if you take a person of deep knowledge, this person would introduce two sides of this assessment. One, his physical understanding how child of 3 days apart, and we assume that this happened almost immediately, would look like. And another one, what actually Carol was talking about, psychological impact, because you can see that a woman who was more talkative, she could be assessed from today psychoanalysis like a guilty party. And this is why I think this is something underground. Otherwise, why Tanakh would introduce such detail like 3 days apart? I bet you if you take a good doctor who has deal with the newborn kids right away will tell you immediately based on this fact which child is which because of umbilical cord, for instance, how it's it heals, you can say by this one. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
This is my few cents based on those details.
Right. That's interesting. That's interesting. Maybe King David did do some due diligence and in terms of King Shlomo Shlomo Melech in terms of recognizing the age mm-hmm. of the children. Yeah, that's a very very good point. Okay, let's look at Rabbi Usher Weiss on this just for a few minutes. Okay. He says as follows.
So, I wanted to say something.
Okay, hold on, Nitza. Let's get this. Let's do this for a few minutes, and then we're going to. I'll come back to you. So he quotes. So Shlomo HaMelech quotes the story, and then he says, "Hinei kvar nilvu chachamim lev lahavin nilav chachmei lev lahavin et hachachma hayetera shel mishpat zeh." So many people have already tried to understand what wisdom Shlomo had there. Uvame ra'u et chachmat ha'elokim asher b'kirbo, umatzinu bazeh kama derachim b'divrei rabotenu hakadmonim. So there are lots of different approaches. So he quotes first the Radbaz, who says as follows. Hold on, please. I just need to plug in my computer. He quotes the Radbaz, who says as follows. Haradvaz katav Baze kama dirachim, vatsar hashave shebekulam, sheshlomo yada bechachmato mitzad atzmo, mi aim hachai, umi mehen aim hamet. Shlomo knew already, without this trick, who was the real mother. Ela shem tzitach bula lohochiach, kabel kulam, et sidkat hachrato. But he did something in order so that everyone would accept it. Meaning he knew somehow, maybe because of what Zach said, but he knew, but had he just declared this is the mother of the live child, no one would have believed him. So he concocted this methodology with the baby in half, which he knew would get the mother to speak up, in which case everyone would now believe him. And we see at the end, that's true. Everyone realized how smart he was. Sort of what Zach said. He just looked at the baby and he said, well, this one looks like this one. Right? It's interesting. The Radba says that Shlomo didn't use any great trick. It wasn't even a psychological thing about who the mother was. It was just the resemblance between them. Oh, Shekir mitzad tenu ota isha hashakranit. This is what Zach said. Or that he recognized through the movements of the lying mother. Zach said it was more about her speech, but maybe also about her body language. Shehi mishakeret, that she was a liar. Ki ha'adama mishaker tenu otav mishuonot v'lo tiv'iyot. When you're lying, you're acting in an unnatural way. So we'll stop there. So that's really fascinating. Right? The Radbaz says this was a combination of just a good old-fashioned of being observant between which baby looked more like the one mother than the other. Which of the two the baby looked like. And just his sense that he got a bad vibe from one of them in terms of the body language, and said, well, that this must be, but again, he had to do something which was going to make it believable to everybody else. That's the first thing he says. He also notes, by the way, quoting the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, but I'll just quote the Rambam for you. Yesh l'dayan ladun bedine mamanot al pi hadivarim shedaato nota lahen shehein emet v'hadavar chazak bilibo shehukein af al pi shein sham ra'aya birura. A judge may adjudicate cases involving monetary laws based on factors that he is inclined to regard as true and concerning which he feels strongly in his heart are correct, even though he does not have proof of the matters. Vein tzarich lomar im haya yodea bivadai shedavar kein hu shehu dan kifi ma sheyodea. And needless to say, that if he personally knows that a matter is true, he may judge the case according to his knowledge. So even the Shulchan Aruch accepts this notion that a judge could have an intuition about something is true. Now, it's only dinei mamonot, not dinei nefashot, right? Not life and death cases, but financial matters, okay? But then the Rambam preempts the question. He says, Im Kain, right here, Lama tricha Torah shnei edim. If a judge can go based on his intuition, why does the Torah require two judges? Shebizman sheyavo lifnei hadayan shnei edim yadun al pi edutan af al pi sheeno yodea im bemet heidu obasheker. Because when you do have two witnesses, then you have to judge according to their testimony. But if you remember, in this case, let's go back up to the text. What did the woman say? She says, there's no one living in our house and there are no witnesses, right? She says as follows.
In this case, there are no witnesses.
Right, she says it here. V'yibayom ha'shlishi l'liditi v'atel gam isha azot v'anachnu yachdav ein zar itanu babayit. There was no one else with us in the house. Zulati shtayim anachnu babayit, except for the two of us. So you see that Shlomo had no witnesses. There was nothing for him to go on, but he had his own sense of what was right based on his intuition, And based on that, he went with it. Okay? So, we see here, Rabbi Weiss concludes, Ve'od nira de'efshar de mishpat hazeh ha-mikor l'divrei ha-rambam. It could be that the Rambam, who, the one that we just read, uses this as a proof. This story as a proof. D'dayan yachol ladun al pi hanirelo emet af l'lo raya ha-mo'il b'dine ha-rayot. He's allowed to use his intuition, even though there's nothing perfect. There's no testimony that he could base it on. He says, "Ach mikol makom pashut lechora dibidinei nefashot ein ladun ela al pi ra'aya edim ve'edim." When it comes to capital cases, you must have witnesses and you must have evidence. Va'ayin Rosh Hashanah. He looks at then he quotes the Gemara that we learned in Rosh Hashanah, where Kohelet wanted to do ladun dinin shebalev, shelo be'edim, shelo batra, yatsta bat kov amra lo, katuv yosher divrei emet, mikom makom, dechazinan shezeh haya darko shel Shlomo. Notwithstanding that God told him not to do it, this was Shlomo's way. Ladun dinin shebalev, to use his intuition. Ukimoshe ala b'mishpat zeh, when it comes to punishment, you have to use witnesses, but not in a case like this. So we see here that there is some precedent or some legitimacy, if you will, to a judge judging that way, purely using their intuition. Without necessarily cross-examining witnesses and examining evidence, and using the regular procedure in the courtroom. So that's a little bit about what's going on in this week's Haftorah, and now we have a little bit of a better understanding about some of the halachic issues regarding this type of judgment. Okay, I know that Nitza had something that she wanted to say, so go ahead, please.
This Gemara already said what I wanted to say. The list that you added now.
Yes. Okay.
It's not a regular case. There is no case here of punishment that we are going to punish somebody.
Right.
That's why Shlomo got the option to use all his knowledge comparatively to the past. What he knew is the history, like Yaakov, and he could behave with his power of judgment as a psychologist. And that's actually what the Gemara said. It's not a regular case. It's a case right. Where no witnesses are there and no punishment is going to be given to anybody.
Right, right.
So that was the judgment.
Right, very good. Okay, everyone. Thank you so much for joining. Wonderful to have you. Have a wonderful day. Happy and enjoy the last two days of Chanukah. And the early best wishes for Shabbat Shalom. Okay. See you soon, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.